Very excited to have this conversation now. Nick Allen, a sports psychologist at the Basin River Valley Health, joins us. And Nick, you were just down in for a big conference on Dynavision training, and you know that's one of them. There's lots of vision training, of course, but the correlations now between how vision training is decreasing the amount of concussions. How come?
Yeah, there's some amazing research that's coming out that's really showing that when we have vision training or sports vision training, that we can actually help prevent the incidence or the rate of concussion. So what the theory is that if we can train our eyes and our brain to process information better on the field and see things faster on the ice or on the field, that we can avoid those dangerous hits. So this isn't necessarily going to prevent blindside hits coming from behind, hitting those athletes into the boards. Vision training is not going to fix that. But it is going to help us prevent putting ourselves in those dangerous situations or help us avoid those situations because we're able to process and make better decisions on the field. That really is essentially the sole purpose of sports vision training, is reading and reacting better on the field.
There was a study from the University of Cincinnati that was kind of the major one on a team that had done vision training and then stopped.
Yeah, so the UC Bearcats, their baseball team has a full comprehensive sports vision program that includes Dynavision training along with some dry line vision exercises, which would be essentially like eye exercises. They're called saccadic charts. So you might have a row of letters on the wall and you're kind of moving your eyes back and forth between those letters. But essentially Dynavision is the core function of their program, the same light board that we have at the base. And from, I believe, I don't remember exactly the years, but from 2009 to 2012, they instituted a sports vision program. And then in 2013, they changed their coach. And that new coach didn't do sports vision training program. So those 3 years they actually were doing the vision training program, they had the best batting or one of the best batting averages in the entire their grouping for their division. But when they removed that vision training, their batting average as a team dropped 10% that same season. The same was not a huge increase or change in players from the 1 year to the next, but a 10% decrease just by removing that.
They went from a 274 to a 258.
Yeah.
Which is significant.
Yeah, for a whole team. So that's the team average.
Yeah, lots of the same players.
Yep, most of the same players and having that decrease. So we know that vision training helps us, and vision training has been a big part of baseball for an extended period of time. And so we know that it helps us to be able to see the spin on the ball faster. We can track the ball faster, so we're making better decisions when we hit. Nike's, for many years, they're not making them anymore, but they had their strobe glasses to help kind of process and read the ball, whether it be a football, basketball, baseball, being able to track those balls better and make better decisions. And a lot of that's a function of sports vision training.
The Bearcats also had the vision training for their football program. And from 2006 to 2009, they had 35 concussions reported during that time.
Reported.
Then they got on the vision training. And from 2010 to 2013, they had six.
Yeah.
So they went from
staggering.
35 to six. And the one significant change they made was incorporating the vision training, because in theory, then the players were, and they talked about their vision, their peripheral vision especially, change, and they were able to see players coming and be prepared for it.
Yeah, and it's not even so much that their actual peripheral vision changed, because that's set biologically by our eyes and by our skull and everything like that. But their processing of the information that they see, that's what really we can improve.
Okay.
That's the brain function that we can improve, and that information processing and the neuronal development that will happen in the brain. But it's a staggering decrease in numbers. This is the first scientifically peer-reviewed study that we're actually seeing that's showing we can actually help prevent concussion. Right, and which is phenomenal. I mean, it's such a huge issue in sport and in society these days that if we can prevent that, it's fantastic.
Are more teams looking at this and now saying we've got to get Dynavision to our players?
Yeah. So UC in particular, they started with just their baseball team, and they expanded their football. And now, from my understanding and talking with their staff, their entire athletic department is using Dynavision as part of their programs. At the conference, we had people from all the way. We had optometrists from London, England, that were there. Lots of different universities were there in learning how to incorporate more sports vision training and more Dynavision work into their programs. So it's something that's expanding across not just professional sport, but into university sport and into amateur sport as well. There's a from skeet shooters to baseball to racket sports. Goalies are kind of the main area that, you know, we focus on at just in Canada. I think that's being hockey, a hockey country, that tends to be the main focus. But it is definitely growing, and we're seeing, you know, huge leaps and bounds in our growth at the base with our programs as well, and having phenomenal results.
The other thing at this conference, some of the presenters were the doctors who work specifically with Sidney Crosby.
Yeah, so they're a group called Cognitive FX, and they were essentially the neuropsychologists that when Crosby wasn't getting better and like, what the hell are we going to do? What's going on? We don't know what's happening. He contacted them, and they assessed him. And what they do is they use fMRI, so functional MRI, to see how the neurons are firing inside the brain. And so they've actually been able to develop, there are several key kind of bio markers that show up on these scans. And Crosby apparently had none of these. When they finally assessed him, he had none of these biomarkers present. So they asked him, well, where does it hurt? And he points to his neck, and as the story goes, and they asked, well, who's looked at your neck? And no one had looked at the soft tissue injury that would have accompanied that concussion. Again, he was kind of the forefront and the person who really started in Canada for the most part, this real great look at concussion. And so we know now that it's concussion's not just the brain. It has soft tissue injury. It has these vision discrepancies that start to happen. All these things start to happen. I mean, with concussion, we have 80% of concussion injuries that are assessed. We have 80% of those have a reported visual discrepancy that happens, whether it be blurry vision, vertigo, things like that. And that's just reported. So it's probably a lot higher. And we already have a high number with 80%. So if we're not looking at all these pictures, we have a situation that happened with Crosby where he's probably out longer than he needed to be from a concussion standpoint, because he didn't have any of those concussion markers anymore. So that's where functional MRIs is fantastic. If there's any listeners that are there that, you know of a way that we can get some access to a functional MRI, please have them call me, because we have all the same tools at the base to do all these same things. We just don't have access to a functional MRI, and it's quite an expensive piece of machinery.
Is there one, like, do we have functional MRIs?
Yeah, well, so any MRI machine should be able to do a functional MRI. So these Cognitive FX, they're out of Utah. They are essentially, in my opinion, they're the leaders of this kind of this assessment. And so they still have a bunch of specialized equipment. They use lots of fiber optic information to try and allow themselves to do the. They do, again, I'm not well versed in this, but they do essentially 9 or 11 different tests while the person's in the MRI machine. So they have to have a special TV because there's all the magnets. They can't just run a normal TV there. And they run them through these 11 tests while they're in the MRI. And then based on that, they develop a treatment plan. What we're finding is acutely after a concussion, your brain is underworking. So it's not working as the neurons are not firing as much as they should be. But in that 15% of concussion people that have, you know, longer than that average 2 to 4 week recovery, that 15% we're finding either sometimes their brain's actually overfiring for the same activity. So to watch a read a book, for example, well, their brain's actually working harder than it has to read that book. And that's why we get such the fatigue and we feel so foggy and groggy afterwards, because the brain is overworking.
Okay.
So we have to train the brain to get back to and reset essentially back to that,
how
that
do you
normal
do that?
Functioning. Well, that's through the DynaVision, these different exercises, vision exercises. It's getting essentially getting the brain to reprocess that information. So it's whether it be flashing, a number on the tachyscope on the DynaVision, get them to work more on the peripheral vision. What we're finding a lot with now, because we've modified some of our programs, is that say the person gets hit, well, their left lower visual field is really there's a real deficit there compared to the right. So we'll focus a little bit more on that left side. Or in some cases, if the brain's overfunctioning, we actually have to simplify the process and kind of build it back up.
So that's what I was going to ask you. So when it's firing too hot, let's say, it's like your car almost overheating, your engine's running too hot, your brain's running too hot, you've got to slow your brain down.
Yeah, exactly.
And by
exactly.
slowing it down is you've got to give it simpler processes to break down?
Yeah, and then you learn to say, okay, we only need to have this amount of the brain, so to speak, fire. So we get to a very basic exercise where we train it with this very basic exercise and we slowly bring it up. So again, a lot of the challenges, and anybody that's suffered a concussion knows this, that it's really the intensity of the stimuli that really seems to trigger those symptoms. So if we're overdoing things, oh, it really seems to throw things off. And sometimes it might be movement. So driving in a car where there's all this movement around, that's really difficult. For some people, it's loud noises or too much noise. That becomes a problem. Some people, it's the combination of things. You know, they can handle a loud room, no problem. They can see lots of things moving without any problems. But as soon as you combine those two stimuli in one scenario, now they're really set off. Their headache's really bad. They're all woozy. They're all dizzy. It's every concussion is different. And that's why this functional MRI is such an amazing gift for clients that are suffering from long-term effects of concussion, because now we actually can say, this is what part of your brain is not working properly. Now we can go and actually fix it. So there's hope for these people that have been suffering concussions for a long period of time.
We are talking about concussions, and I wanted to, in this big study, because you guys have the DynaVision, and there's all sorts of, if you're just joining us, results showing how vision training is decreasing the amount of concussions and stuff. Just, and
100%.
It doesn't protect you from absorbing the hit. It allows you to be aware that the hit is coming
and avoid it.
And avoid
essentially.
It. Obviously not from behind or anything. You're not going to see in the back of your head, but it's allowing you. You're training your brain and your eyes to allow things to see them faster than you usually do.
Exactly. And so, and again, just so we can remember, if we can process that information sooner, if we can see that information sooner, we can make better decisions and we can avoid those hits. That's essentially what we're talking about.
Now, for children to adults, because it's a big difference, right? There's
most
a lot
definitely.
Of kids playing sports now, and concussion protocol is out there. And I know there are some who think maybe there's some that are diagnosed with a concussion and maybe they don't have one, and there's no proven stats on that yet. But the one thing I found interesting, Nick, that you told me was that children are much more susceptible to needing a longer recovery period than adults when it's concussion. So, and this is crucial for parents and coaches when little Johnny or little Jill gets injured and they got a concussion and the doctor says 10 days or 2 weeks, and they're like, in 5 days, the parents, well, my kid's fine.
Yeah.
That's where you have to, as hard as it is, say to your son or daughter, you're likely going to have to wait.
You got to say no. And I mean, because we also know, you know, so A, like you said, that children are more susceptible and they have longer and have longer recoveries. Yes,
okay.
They're more susceptible to longer recoveries. And we can talk about like the developing brain and teen, and, you know, whether it be youth and teens and all these kind of things. But essentially, we also know that physical symptoms recover first, and cognitive symptoms such as reaction time, processing speed, so the actual brain activity, that is slower to recover than the physical symptoms. So sometimes they might feel fine, and to everybody else, you know, their balance looks great, they're walking just fine, but their actual processing abilities on the field or on the ice are slower.
So as a parent, is there an online test you can get your child to take before the start of their sporting season? Because, you know, I don't expect the sporting teams to do this. As a parent, it's your child. If you want the best for your child, is there an online test they can test that does their cognitive? So let's say they get a concussion in November, December, or January, and they say they're feeling fine. You could do the test again and make sure the results are similar.
Yeah, the challenge with that, so we don't have an online program. Ours is an iPad-based program for our preseason baseline testing. I encourage everybody to get preseason baseline testing, whether it's through us or another organization, doesn't really matter, but make sure that you get some baseline testing for your child. Is that going to solve everything? Is it the magic pill for concussion? Of course not. It definitely is. It can't be, because there's only a small portion of everything, but we need to have that baseline testing, because it does make the recovery process much, we can be less conservative in that recovery process. We know, all right, the athlete is better. Otherwise, we're just comparing it to normative values, and that's not always beneficial. Now, there is some mixed evidence in terms of, you know, baseline levels versus normative values. Sometimes the normative values are just as good, but in general, we want to have a baseline. It's better for the practitioner.
And what does a baseline consist of?
So for us, we use what's called the C3 Logix program. It's developed with the Cleveland Clinic, their concussion program. So it involves balance, a balance test, which is the balance error scoring system. So it's essentially six balance tests that they go through.
Okay.
There's a cognitive processing, which essentially is a symbol match exercise. There's another processing speed exercise that is like a connect the dots exercise. There's two variations of a connect the dot exercise, as well as a reaction time exercise, where there's just a simple hit a button, kind of hit a light, a flashing light exercise, and see how fast you go, and then a choice reaction where you have to pick between two lights, you have to pick the right one that's turned the right color. So that's the main component, or some of the components of our C3 program, but which is similar to what Impact, lots of people that may be listening have heard of the Impact baseline concussion. That was kind of like the first computerized neurological program. It's good for what it does, but it's very limited in what it does. It doesn't have balance included. And one of the big things why we decided to go with the C3 versus impact is because it also includes a vision assessment. So we can actually get a baseline level where their vision's at before a concussion. Because as I said earlier, 80% of concussions have a reported visual component. Impact doesn't assess that at all. So our baseline components need to involve balance for sure. It needs to involve some neurological processing such as cognitive skills, information processing, etc. And we need to have that visual component as well. And I think part of what we would like to do with every athlete is to have a physical assessment as well, knowing what their range of motion is like, what their flexibility is like, because all that will get affected when there's a whiplash injury that accompanies a concussion as well. We also include our DynaVision program as part of our ideally as part of our baselines. And again, the challenge becomes a little bit of the dollar value for all this. Where do we draw the line? That's always the challenge. The C3 programs, the impact programs, most of the baseline programs out here, they at least offer some basic level that we can compare to, so we have a better idea of what's actually happening. Unless we're actually doing full neurological makeups of tests of all these athletes, which is just, those are hours and hours and hours of getting done, which is just not feasible. The C3 program, in our opinion, is one of the best options to provide for athletes to give them that baseline test. So we definitely want to have that baseline test. There isn't anything online that's valid, that's consistent. Some places will also use the SCAT or the SCAT3 as their assessment tool. The SCAT3, if your organization or your coaches are using the SCAT3, it's not a valid baseline tool. It is an on-field measurement, so it'll help you tell if your athlete is suffering from a concussion, but it should not be used as a baseline test.
Now, the SCAT3, it's not as simple as, okay, watch my finger. I mean, because it's a long time ago, but that's how it used to be.
No, it's much more advanced. So it includes a memory component. It involves some information processing. It involves, you know, knowing where you're at and assessing some of those physical components as well, seeing how eye movements are. It's essentially making sure there's not a more severe injury going on, such as like a brain bleed or something along those lines where we need to get immediate medical attention. Concussion's still serious. A concussion is a concussion is a concussion. There's no more degree, you know, oh, it's a grade one or a grade two or it's a mild. There is no such thing as that. Even a mild injury can cause very severe symptoms, and very severe concussion can cause very mild symptoms. So it really is dependent upon each individual athlete. But we want to make sure that we are assessing all those components and having essentially as much education as we can around concussion, because we know that education is one of the biggest factors that help ensure a safe and proper recovery.
Nick Allen from Rivel Health and the Base joined the sports psychologist. We're talking about vision training and the connections now, all the studies that they're seeing with concussions. And it's interesting to hear the physical symptoms of concussions will go away much quicker than the cognitive ones. And the cognitive ones, you don't know. As a parent, so you ask basic questions to your son. Do you remember this last week? Yeah, sure. And that's not a good enough test. So if you have the baseline, and that's an interesting one for parents. That's up to the individual parents. I don't think we have to tell anyone that they have to do anything.
Yeah.
It's up to you on your own. But if you have a baseline test, that's the only way you will know accurately if your child has a concussion, if they're healed after the fact, because then they go back after it, they do the baseline test again. What percentage do you give do you have to be within 2%? Like the numbers, how does it improve? Because I'm sure I could do a baseline test on a Tuesday, and based on my sleep the next two nights, if I did it Friday, it might be a little bit
different. Yeah, there's always a little bit of wiggle room, and there's no set percentage because every athlete is a little bit different. So that's where it becomes a little bit dependent upon the practitioner and what's going on. Generally, most athletes, though, once they've done a baseline, they do a baseline at the beginning of the season, they should meet or exceed most of those baseline scores following a rehabilitation program. So because we'll start including DynaVision into our program, we'll do some more balance components. So all those things through training should be better than what they were at with their baseline. So we usually look for them to be at or at least above. But there is a bit of variation. Every athlete's a little bit different. Even with the fMRI studies that I was talking about earlier and their biomarkers, there's still a little bit of wiggle room in terms of where the person has to fall, because no single person is exactly the same. But going back to the physical and cognitive symptoms, the things that also parents have to remember is, even though you're a child or even adults, let's be honest with ourselves, we might say that we're good, but it's usually because we want to get back playing. You know, any competitive athlete, anybody who really enjoys sport, they don't want to be out. I can remember in high school, I used to be a fencer and I injured my wrist. I actually thought about switching hands and fencing left-handed because I didn't want to leave my sport. So I was going to switch hands. I injured my knee. I told them to tape my knee so I couldn't bend it so I could stay out in the field. Are these smart decisions as athletes for us to be doing for our body? Of course not. So we have to recognize our athletes are competitive. They want to get back out there. We have to be the adults, or we have to be the ones that say, you know what, you're not ready to get out
and
there.
And they can't fake a baseline, can you?
No. You can't. You can try, but their design, our program in particular, will not allow you to fake it, because if you are, it it recognizes that and forces you to do it over and over and over again until you actually do it properly.
So you couldn't say, okay, you know what? I want to go in with a lower score at the start of the year. So if I do get hit in the head, then I can have my lower score later.
And that's what happens. But with there's even the impact, all the programs are C3. They have essentially it's built into the program to make sure that if their scores are too low, it highlights it for the practitioner. Or it says, you know what, this isn't a valid score. You can't use this as a comparison down the road.
The other study that I found very interesting, and no one has yet come up with a defined answer for children specifically, we talk about how children have they're susceptible to longer recovery. They're not more susceptible to concussions. I want to make that clear. They're more susceptible to longer recoveries from a concussion. But that in females, like in your daughters, moms and dads, your daughters, it's worse.
Yeah.
But they don't know why.
Statistically speaking, and we don't really know why. No, and so we were talking off air about it. Maybe is there a strength component, you know, to the muscles
to
of the neck,
and to
help support. And as I was saying, I don't think that's the whole answer because the brain is in a fluid, so it's floating. That's why, because it's floating in our skull, that's the reason why helmets, mouth guards, headbands for things like soccer, they don't actually prevent concussion because nothing can actually stop that brain from moving and smashing into the skull, which is ultimately what causes that issue. So we don't really know why, but we do know that some studies have shown that doing like a neck prehab kind of exercise, or a strength program for the neck muscles and shoulder muscles, can help reduce concussion. Now, there have been mixed results. I'll be very clear about that. And I don't know if this is the exact team, but I've been told that the Baltimore Ravens, the NFL team, they have a prehab program they put all their players through, and they do have one of the lowest incidents of concussion in the NFL.
And in theory, because going back to Sidney Crosby, when they finally diagnosed the root of his issue, it had to do with the soft tissue damage in his neck. That was the root of the problem.
Well, so he still would have had a concussion,
yes,
but he didn't necessarily have to be out 18 months because of the concussion. Maybe he was only out 6 months because of the concussion, but the other 12 were because we weren't they weren't addressing the real problem that was happening in his neck, and so we were missing part of the puzzle, and that's always been the challenge with concussions because it mimics so many different things. I mean, concussion syndrome mimics PTSD, so post-traumatic stress disorder. It mimics depression. It mimics whiplash. It mimics all these different things. So what is what, and how, it really the differential, the differing diagnosis becomes so important.
How long does a DynaVision program, so if somebody's out there says, okay, you know what, I want to set up my son or daughter, I want to go get them in on DynaVision to improve their vision, which might hopefully lower the potential of a concussion. How often do you have to go, and how long does each training session last?
So each training session is about half an hour, and that incorporates our DynaVision program as well as some dry line vision exercises as well. So this might surprise a lot of people. After just two runs, so 2 1-minute runs on the DynaVision board, we already can actually measure statistically improvements in their processing abilities as an athlete.
Wow.
So now, are these long-term sustainable changes? I would say probably not. But in our program, so generally we recommend once a week for about 12 weeks is our standard program for an athlete. We have some athletes, if they're higher performers, they want to have faster benefits, we'll go twice a week. But we've had athletes that just come in once a month, just kind of maintain some things during the season, and they're still seeing improvements in their score. So it doesn't have to be very often, but we need to keep doing it.
Well, the brain's pretty smart.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And it recalls things, sees it again. Now I know how to go faster.
And particularly if they're doing sports, so like a goalie, for example, we'll work on that reaction time, work on the information processing. Well, yes, we're getting those gains in the DynaVision session, but they're maintaining those gains when they're on the ice and they're practicing. So we don't need to be doing it quite as frequently to maintain those gains. Now, during off-season when we're not doing all that stuff, that's where we'll generally increase our programs. We have goalies that will come in twice a week during the season to really help ensure that they're improving those reaction times. And they're even forwards, and I have some centers that have had a 10% improvement in their face-off percentage from season to season, and all they've added in was their sports vision program.
Nick Allen from River Valley Health in the Base. If you want to book in a training session, 430-9224, or go to rivervalleyhealth.com. Interesting stuff. When's the next big... is it kind of a year thing that they do?
Yeah, they do an annual conference. We're hoping to try and maybe host it here in Edmonton at some point in the near future, do the first one in Canada, but I have to push that one a little bit more. But yeah, every year they do this conference. This was the first time they were doing it out east. Usually they do it in Cincinnati. So it was very exciting to be a presenter at that conference. So I look forward to seeing what the future brings for us.